evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I'm the managing editor of Reader Views.
And I'm Victor Volkman with Loving Healing Press in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's June 18th, 2009, and welcome to episode number 90 in our series. Tonight's topic is, turn your book into a speaking career and sell your book at the back of the room. And our special guest is Tweed Scott. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. Please send us your questions and comments to info@authorsaccess.com. Now tonight we're on the line with Tweed Scott, who is a laugh-out-loud, funny, motivational speaker and corporate entertainer. He retired from broadcasting after 31 years. His accomplishments include serving as the operations manager of the highest-rated FM station in America and later of the fifth highest-rated AM station in America. Tweed is an award-winning speaker and the author of three-time national award-winning book, Texas, in Her Own Words. He is the owner of Tejas Communications, a writing and public speaking company. He is also president of the board of the Writers League of Texas. He speaks statewide about Texas and the Texan character. Tweed loves spreading what he calls the gospel of Texas. He speaks nationally on attitude, leadership, and change. His book is sold at some remarkable places, including the Alamo, the Bob Bullock Texas State History Museum, both of the state capitol building gift shops, San Jacinto Monument and Battleground, the Sam Houston Statue and Park in Huntsville, and even the General Store in Luckenbach. He has sold nearly 5,000 copies of his book, almost exclusively by hand-selling in the back of the room after one of his presentations. He's here with us tonight to tell us how it's done. Well, good evening, Tweed.
Thank you, and good evening to you. I hope all is going well.
Well, it sure is, and we're so happy to have you here. I understand you're parked under some tree in Johnson City, Texas, with air conditioner on and talking to us.
It's hot, you know, and, you know, we may live here, but we're not foolish, you know.
That's right. So just kind of fill us in while you were in Johnson City.
I was part of a workshop today, which was in conjunction with the LBJ National Park and also the Johnson City Library and the Writers League of Texas. And there was three writers, one who specializes in fiction, and then a children's writer and illustrator, and myself. I did a workshop on memoir and nonfiction. So we were all gathered here today out of the historic national park, and just had a great time. A great group of people came out and had a lot of laughs, and we learned a little bit about each other and really we got into the writing craft, and after all, it is a craft. So
it sure is. And I personally have your book, and it's great. And Victor was introducing you, and he had mentioned the fact that your book is sold in many gift shops, the Sam Houston Statue Park in Huntsville, even the General Store in Luckenbach. Well, if anybody hasn't been to Luckenbach, I tell you, it's a trip. And so what I want to ask you, Tweed, right now is, how do you get your book into all these stores? Did you do this on your own? Do you have a PR person doing this for you? Or tell our listeners what the success secret is.
Well, in my case, I guess I should say I lucked out, or however you want to look at it. This book has been special from the get-go. In some ways, it's been successful in spite of me and not because of me, but because of the content. About a month after the book came out, I was contacted by the Alamo. And they asked if, in fact, they could carry the book in their gift shop. Well, obviously, I was blown away by that, because the Alamo is a very, very particular thing. It is run by the Daughters of the Republic of Texas. Everything that goes into that gift shop is screened and approved and all that. And when I wrote the book, I remember I wrote two words in the back of the book that I just thought was going to eliminate me coming right out of the blocks. I used the expression ethnic cleansing. And I said that essentially that's what Santa Anna was up to when he came back north and killed everybody at the Alamo and tried to execute everybody Goliath. He had a scorched earth policy, basically. And the plan was, if I kill enough of these people, the rest are going to get scared and go home. Well, They didn't get scared. They got mad. Mm-hmm. And obviously the rest is history. But for the Alamo, when they picked up my book, it was the first non-Alamo-specific book that they carried. So they had a very limited but very niche marketing kind of thing. But they liked the book well enough. They picked it up. And once the Alamo picked up the book, that was instant validation. That was instant credibility. And doors blew open for me all over the place. And the fact that I'm a speaker, I speak at these places. Like I spoke at the Bob Bullock State History Museum. And so doors opened there. And it's such a great gift book anyway. They started buying them. And now I do book signings at the Alamo once a month or once every other month. And we move a lot of copies. But it was having that validation. And made, when you say your book's in the Alamo, trust me, other retailers listen. And so that really greased deals for me.
So what I'm hearing, it's really important to at least try to get your book, and specifically because this is a nonfiction, and it's also a regional book, into one specific area or one specific store, like in this case it was the Alamo, because as you had just mentioned, that other retailers, well, wow, you know, if it's at the Alamo, it's got to be good.
There you go.
So that's what I'm hearing you say. And now, so let's talk about this being a specific book. It is a book about Texas. It is a book, it's regional. And so do you feel that because of this, it has more marketability?
Certainly, obviously in Texas, because as you well know, this is once its own country. And as a result of that, there's still this palpable nationalism about Texas and a pride that its citizens have for it. There's an absolute love of this place. I know a lot of people around the country who may live in other places, never been here, may not understand or get how can anybody feel that good about where they're from or where they live. And you know the answer to that. So anything Texas is marketable. Anything Texas is hot, basically, and it doesn't seem to be a subject that ever gets old. So and my book basically is a peek into the Texas psyche. It explains why Texans are the way they are, where all the attitude comes from. And so even Texans sort of smirk when I say that, and they say, oh, you think you know? Give me a copy of that book.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it almost says itself in that sense.
So is your book sold in other states also?
It's available if you ask my name. You know, you can order it. I was in all the Barnes & Nobles in Texas, so I should still be in the Barnes & Noble system. But is it distributed nationwide automatically? No. Because I, like you said, from the get-go, I kind of saw this as a regional book. But you have to understand, there's 24 million people in Texas. And if I just sold every copy of my book in Texas, hey, I'm happy. But if somebody in Nebraska or Iowa wants to buy copies, well, that's gravy. And thank you very much.
Right. That makes complete sense. Tweed. I'm not clear on whether you thought about the speaking career before you were writing the book or after you were writing the book. How did you put the two together?
Okay, that's a two-headed question, Victor. I'll explain why. My background, I did radio for 31 years. So obviously speaking is something that comes to me very easily. I don't get flustered in front of crowds. I can speak in front of 800 or 5,000. You know, it doesn't matter. An audience is an audience, and, you know, you try to reach out to them and communicate with them. And I knew from the get-go how I was going to market Texas in her own words, and that was I'd done a lot of research, and I realized that if I could get up into a presentation and then sell my book in the back of the room, more than likely I would sell more copies that way than I ever would in traditional book signing. That has proven to be the case. My average has been, as of late, well, actually, since I started marketing the book that way, on average, when I give a presentation, I will close anywhere from one-third to one-half the room almost every time.
Wow.
Case in point, I did that workshop. There was 25 people present for the whole workshop. I had 17 in my class. I sold 25 books a day.
That's a good day.
Yeah, so on top of that, what happened, I knew from the get-go that the way I was going to market my book was to start with the Rotaries and the Kiwanis's and the Lions Clubs, get up, do my free speech thing there for, you know, 10, 15 minutes and sell my book in the back of the room. But a remarkable thing happened. After I gave maybe, I don't know, 15 presentations, people started coming up to me and saying, hey, we liked your presentation. How much would you charge to speak to my group? And I thought, this is kind of cool. And so then I began to develop the business model that, wait a minute, I actually sat down and I made myself think this out. Am I a writer who speaks, or am I a speaker who writes? And I really realized that because of my background, I'm really a speaker who writes. I've got a passion for what I write, obviously, but that right there shifted my whole paradigm. That's where my business model literally cranked a 180 there. It wasn't so much about selling the book as it was generating the speaking business. So as a result of that, my speaking fees have gone up, and yet I still get to sell the book in the back of the room, which I tell you, I have speaker friends who charge, you know, $5,000 a presentation. They sell more than that in product in the back of the room. This is a viable business model. And if an author is comfortable with getting out there and talking about his book, you can do that. Not every author is. And I'll just come back and close this question out with early in my research of the publishing business and knowing I was going to have a book out soon, I learned that in writing, an author is going to spend 6% of his time writing his book. He's going to spend 94% of his time marketing that book. And having done this with this book for the last 3 years, I can tell you that statistic is dead on. It's a truism. That's how it is.
Wow, that's a real eye-opener. And, yeah, I have to agree with you. For those of us who are going to be successful, it's definitely 6% writing, and then 94% is the rest of it is marketing. And I'm guessing with the back-of-the-room sales, your profit margin is probably at least triple that from a bookstore, yes?
Yeah, and that depends, too, on your product. Like if I sell a CD, I've got a CD called The Backstory, which is basically the story behind the book. My book was an odyssey of sorts, and people say, how do you get published? And the first thing I'll tell them is, don't do it the way I did it, because it's not going to happen. I mean, God, serendipity, whatever you want to call it, just this book was meant to come out. Things just happened. And so I've got a CD that I sell that you can buy separately for $15, or if you buy it in conjunction with the book, then you can get it for like $10 or whatever. And that's part of the secret to the back of the room is, you know, building packages that have value. But you're right. The profit margin on those other products, the profit margin of the book's going to stay the same. But when you start adding the add-ons, yeah, there's more profit built in there. Because let's face it, if you make a CD outside of my time of actually producing it and burning it, I may have $3 of work into the CD, maybe, putting it in a jewel case and all that stuff, because I have a light scribe drive, so I light scribe the label on it. So I may have $3 in the CD, but if I sell it for $15, you know, $12 isn't a bad poke.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's a great. So let's talk about how you manage things in the back of the room, because, you know, after a presentation, people get kind of antsy if they have to wait. How do you get those 15 books sold?
Well, here's my modus of operandi. I will get up, I'll give my presentation, and at the end of the presentation, the first thing you do is you bolt to the back of the room, because invariably when you get done with your speech, people are going to come up and want to shake your hand, talk to you, and that's great, and I want to do that, but if I'm not at my table, people are going to look at the book or whatever, and they're just going to walk right on by and go home. I don't want to lose the opportunity of talking to those folks, so I will bolt back to the room. The other key components to this for me personally is that, first of all, you have to have a merchant account. You have to have a credit card machine because you will lose sales. Quick point, my book signing, my book release party, I didn't have one. However, I have a piece of art or a picture in the book done by an artist of mine in Austin named Jamie Rood, and R-O-O-D. And he had a credit card machine, and so we borrowed his. We sold 125 books in 3 hours. I signed books for 3 hours straight. And we made about 40 of those sales were done on credit card machines. Now, had I not had the merchant account, that's money I just flat wouldn't have made. It would have been gone. So, trust me, the book release party was on Saturday. Monday, I had a credit card machine. And then the component that goes with that is get someone to help you. Get someone you trust to handle the credit card machine and handle the money. The reason being, while you're sitting there doing all the mechanics of that, other people are backing up. They're waiting. And frankly, I don't want this to sound egotistical, but it's the real world. When you get done doing a presentation, particularly if it's one people really enjoy, they want to talk to you. They want to talk to the author. They want to ask you questions or whatever. So my time, I think, is better spent socializing with them and talking with them and answering their questions because that makes, you know, the book more real. And I enjoy signing books. I sometimes accuse of writing a book while I sign a book. My thought process is, if you're going to spend $25 of your hard-earned money on my little labor of love, I personally want to thank you in a personal way because I do appreciate every single sale that anybody, whenever they buy a book, because literally they're buying a piece of me. Not so much me, but they're buying a piece of me, but they're buying a piece of all the people that I interviewed, the legacies, basically, in this book. So I have a sense of, I'm going to provide value. That's the thing. You've got to provide value.
You know, those are just some really good points, Tweed, and I know that our listening audience is just, I'm sure, glued to this conversation. And many of them are first-time authors. Many of them are self-published authors. And many of them do not have a speaking career or have never spoken before in groups. But from what I'm hearing from you, that this is really an important aspect of marketing, and specifically a nonfiction book. So what tips do you have or encouragement to these first-time self-published authors that really want to get into the speaking business?
I'd say, first of all, you have to gauge for yourself how comfortable you are speaking to people or with the sales process. This is going to sound ludicrous, but I hate sales. I hate the sales process. But I don't consider what I do sales. And yet it is what it is, but it doesn't feel that way to me. I feel that I'm sharing information and I'm sharing something of value with them because I know when they go home with this book, they're going home with something that's really good. I mean, it's won 3 national awards. It's well accepted. I don't think it's ever had less than a 5-star rating in a review. So you've got to, first of all, gauge how comfortable you are doing that. And we could get into that whole aspect about no matter who publishes your book, whether it's a big time publishing house or if you do it yourself, ultimately it will always come down to the author has to sell or market the book because the publishing company is going to give you maybe a little bit of backing up front, but then you're on your own, Jack. So if you're a first-time author, and you think this is a daunting task, yeah, it can be if you let it overwhelm you, but it really isn't. It isn't brain surgery. It isn't hard to do. If you're not good in front of crowds and you don't feel comfortable doing the presentation or whatever, I would say make one of your next stops a Toastmasters club because I'm a member of Toastmasters, and you can always learn there because they deal with speakers of all experience levels. But you, if you're a first time and you're a little shaky about, man, I don't like talking in front of people. Well, if you're going to move a lot of books this way, you got to get comfortable with it. Toastmasters can help you with that because it's a supportive, cultivating kind of atmosphere. No one's going to rip you up in a Toastmasters club because you're there to learn. You're there, and they're there for the same reason. Now, maybe someone's speaking longer than you have and is working at a different level. But we'll always find encouragement there, and I can't suggest that enough. It's a good place to start. I was trying to think this. One other thing that I did, too, is when I started my speaking business, I wasn't asking for money, okay? I just wanted to have the opportunity to get in front of an audience and tell them about my book. Well, a lot of organizations, they don't want you to get up and give them a 15-minute commercial either because they won't let you speak. That's all you're going to do. But you go to places, you go to the Rotary Clubs, the Kiwanis Clubs, Lions, FOMA, Optimist. Those clubs meet every week or every 2 weeks or whatever their schedule is, and they are begging for speakers because they've got time to fill, and they need a speaker for every meeting. And they're not going to pay you anything. They'll probably give you lunch or breakfast, whatever it is that you attend. But then after you get up and give your presentation, they're going to give you time to go to the back of the room. And when the meeting's over and the guys leave, they've got to pass your table. And they're going to, you know, they're going to buy product. Some of them are. And that's another thing, too, is be very, very careful about the placement of your table. You need to be either by the, well, particularly by the exit, where they have to pass by you in order to leave the building. I had a situation here not too terribly long ago where, frankly, I should have been a lot more assertive than I was. But, you know, this is a big venue that I was speaking at, and I needed to do this speaking venue. And, well, what happened was my book signing table, visualize, if you will, that whoever's listening to this, that you are the speaker, and you're looking out, and you see in the crowd. I'm in a room at this particular time, by the way, of 350, 400 people. I don't know. Large room. It was a ballroom in Austin. And my book signing table was immediately to the right of the podium where I spoke, okay? All the exit doors were on the left-hand side wall, okay? I got a captured audience in there of about 350 people. My table is at the opposite end of where the exit is. Guess how many books I sold? Not very many. So that was my fault. I should have stood up and just jumped on the table and, you know, raised Cain with them, because, frankly, that particular speech was something that someone won in a silent auction, and my presentation was part of it. I didn't know at the time they won it was going to be 400 people. But so I basically got up and spoke to that many people for free. I think I sold, I don't know, 6-8 books. It was horrible. So learn from that.
Well, that's, you know, that's a really good point. And I wanted to also say that you are so right that clubs like Lions and Optimus and Rotary and so on, they're always looking for speakers because, as you say, they have weekly meetings, and they need speakers for all of them. My husband's in the Lions, and that's how I originally heard
of it. As a matter of fact, I met your husband at that Lions Club.
Yes,
it was after we got a review from Reader Views.
That's right.
And about a year later, as a matter of fact,
uh-huh.
He told me who he was married to. That, well, hey, I know her. I don't really know her. I've never met her, but
yeah.
Of course, we've remedied that now last January, wasn't it?
That's right, when we were both facilitating at a workshop. So you had, Tweed, you had just briefly mentioned about the words business model, and I just want to talk briefly about that, too. And what should an author be looking at for a business model to sell the books at the back of the room as compared to any other type of a business model?
That's a good question, Irene. I just knew from my own standpoint, because that's all I really know, that I knew that all along that I was going to sell the book in the back of the room after doing presentations. It didn't occur to me that I would be paid to speak. So I was trying to figure out ways to maximize my book sales. And so that's really what I came up with. Where the shift came for me when I realized people were willing to actually pay me to come to their organization and speak. And then I entered into another whole realm because, okay, how do you set your speaking fees? What's your subject matter going to be? Where do you find these people? How do you get booked? Because it's an ongoing, you know, it's marketing 24/7. And, you know, let's say I gave a keynote at, let's say, I've spoken for the National Women's Association, National Association of Women in Construction, okay? Okay, once I speak to that group, they're not going to have me back next year as their keynote. They've already heard me. You know, I couldn't get back around there for another 4 or 5 years. So in that case, I would refer them to another speaker friend or two of mine who I think would fit their genre or fit their bill. So, but when you start building the business model, you start looking for ways, how can you, where do you find the people who can pay you? And then what you also do is you find yourself getting really creative with how you price things. I'll give you a perfect example. I'm a member of another group. It's a subscription service called SpeakerMatch.com. And essentially, you pay them your fee a month, and you put down your subject matter is, you know, what your areas that you speak, your topics. And then event planners come to this site to find a speaker. And the event planners whose criteria match yours, they send you an email. And then you begin to negotiate with the event planner, okay? So one day I got a phone call from an event planner and said, we're doing a volunteer appreciation banquet it was the city of Pflugerville. And they told me that they had, I think at the time they had, I'm getting here right now, it's been a while, about $750 in budget, okay? And she asked me if I would do it for that, and I said, well, yeah, I can do it for that. She said, and she mentioned, well, I've got another fund where I'm going to buy gifts for my the volunteers. We want to give them an appreciation gift. And then little bell went off in my head, ding, 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 ding. I said, I tell you what I'll do. And this shows you that everything in the speaking business is negotiable. I said, I tell you what I'll do. I'll drop my fee from $750 down to $500. You take that $250, put it into that fund, and I can cut you a deal on the books. So that what potentially was going to be a $750 gig, I dropped my fee to $500, and I think I went home with about $1,700 that night. So you see, stuff's negotiable. You got to kind of be awake to what the possibilities are. So that's kind of how I developed my model. It's just like, what's the situation? And I can back you into that in that the first time I got asked that question, how much will you charge to speak to my group? I know I look like deer in headlights because I don't know what to say. I don't know. You know, now, let me tell you, it only happened once. The next time I got asked that question, I started asking questions. Well, tell me, how many people are going to be there? What's the venue? What's the purpose of the meeting? What are your expectations? You know, what do you want to achieve? Then from that, I was able to determine pretty much what the market will bear. And I'm not out to take anybody to the cleaners. I want you, you book me to come in and speak to your group. You're going to get value. I promise you that. Because I'm not out to, you know, go take your money and get up and give some piece of fluff and run, you know. You've got to provide value. And it's work. I'm telling you, it's work. But, you know, it's what I live for. So I don't consider it work at all. I just spent a good amount of time on this presentation today. But I love it. But it's like anything else. It's work. Don't think that, you know, people are just going to call you up and invite you over to speak. But they got to know about you. So you need to get some publicity, too. So
great. That makes a lot of sense. I'm wondering how much preparation work it takes for each event. I mean, even a regional speaker, there's different regions in Texas, right? And people want to know about their stuff.
The way to approach that, I think, is when you get with an event planner, well, there's several things going on here in this process. When you talk with an event planner, you want to ask questions. You want to find out what their needs are. The interesting thing with working with event planners is, yeah, you're going to get up, you're going to give a presentation to a group, but you know who your audience is too? It's the event planner. You want to make sure your event planner looks good, that when the end of the night and you go home, you want that event planner to look like a genius for hiring you, okay? This is a referral business, and if you start treating people shabbily, you won't work long, because it's kind of like maybe the publishing industry or radio, and it's really kind of a small industry, you know, and everybody knows everybody, and word travels. They talk. Don't think for a second they don't. But, you know, that was my thing. I just knew that there's a whole business aspect to this that you got to think about. It's fun to get up and talk to people and make brand new friends, but there's a lot of work involved. You've got to figure out what it is. You just, like when you put the event planner, you ask a lot of questions, and you ask them, what are your expectations? What do we need to achieve? Or I'll ask them, okay, like particularly I did with corporate, all right, what are the two or three things that you need to do this year to make your business better? Tell me what that is. Or I'll ask them, what particular issues do you do? Are you dealing with? I gave a speech here to the United States Army here at Fort Sill a couple of months ago, and I was dealing with basically accountants. These are the people who handle the manpower and the accounting for the United States Army, and they are under a great deal of stress. I mean, these people basically have their thumbs nailed to the floor, and they're being kicked in the butt and told to run, you know, and a lot of stress. So when I talked with the event planner there, we talked about the kinds of problems they're facing and this and that with the economy, and I basically went back and I built a whole new presentation, and it's called All Stressed Up and No Place to Go. And the mission there was to come in and have some fun, make them laugh, make them forget about their jobs for a little while, and to let them know that we know you're under a lot of stress, but understand what you do is very, very important. You know, can't run the Army without you, you know? So it's to come in. I like to motivate and inspire people to become all that I think God intended them to be. We all have talents, and sometimes we get lazy with it. Anyway, I just went back. I figured out what the problem was. The event planner told me what their needs were, and I went back in. And I still gave my basic core speech. About 80% of my speech will stay the same. But that other 20%, I am going to customize it, and I'm going to drill right in on that particular audience I'm speaking to. It's a craft. It's like writing. But here again, you sell books on the back side of that.
Right, definitely, yes. I haven't heard you mention libraries, schools, or churches. Is that a good place for people starting out to try?
I think that depends, Victor, on your genre. I know I've got some Christian writer friends, and they do churches and that kind of thing all the time. You've got to figure out what do you speak about? What's your comfort level? What do you do? And then once you figure that out, you've got to figure out, all right, well, who needs that kind of speech? You know, what companies... You know, here again, I do, my plan now is to do a lot of lunchtime speeches for corporations. Bring me in, and basically that speech is, just went blank. You're needed now more than ever. And all it is, it's an hour, anywhere 30 minutes to an hour, of morale building and inspiration workers. Because let's face it. So many workers are scared out of their minds they're going to lose their jobs. And what's interesting, and I saw a poll recently, and that's kind of what brought on in my mind, is that, sure, everybody wants to get paid and get paid a lot of money. That's pretty good. But you know what the other main factor is on a job? Job satisfaction. A lot is wrapped around knowing that you're appreciated at work, that the boss appreciates what you're doing. You know, there's nothing better than going busting your spleen at work and have the boss come up and pat you on the back. Man, thanks a lot. You're doing great work. I'm glad you're here. You know, that goes a long way to job satisfaction. And I think with this particular economy, I also think that the companies that show that kind of appreciation for their employees are going to come through this whole thing stronger than others, because their employees understand their role, that they're appreciated. And you know, when someone tells you you've done a good job, what are you going to do? You're going to do a better job. You're going to put more of yourself into what you're doing. So that's the point of this employee appreciation and morale building speech. So, and that's the name of it. You matter now more than ever. So I'll go in and I'll do that at lunchtime during lunch break, or if they want to set up a room. And I don't care if there's 20 people in the room or, you know, 200. Doesn't matter. I'll come in. I'll do that speech for them. It's developing content for markets who can pay you.
You know, you've given us so many good points here. I've got this piece of paper, and I've got all kinds of notes all over it, Tweed. My goodness. And I know that our listening audience is going to be very appreciative, because that's always, you know, how do you market your book, and how do you sell at the back of the room, and what do you do? And you've certainly given us so many good pointers. And before we close, I'd like you to tell our audience what your website address is so they can come and check you out.
This is tough, okay? It's www.tweedscott.com.
And Tweed is TWEED Scott, SCOTT,
right.
.com.
And my email address, if anybody wants to contact me, is tweed@tweedscott.com.
You're one of the lucky ones that could get the website URL for the same as your name. So, and that's always an important thing, and of course, another
Absolutely.
Topic.
If you that? Yes. Or yes. Get with the title of your book.
Yes, for sure. Well, thanks again, Tweed. This has been just a real pleasure. And as I say, I know that our audience has just gathered so much information from your experience, your talk, your back of the room sales, and you've given us a real inspiration. Thank you.
Cool. If it helps one person, I'm happy.
Oh, I think we've helped hundreds of people already. So that's great. Okay. You've been listening to another podcast edition of Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. We'll be back on the air after the holiday on July 9th, 2009, when our topic will be digital publishing beyond the printed page. And our special guest will be Dan Oha. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. We'd love to hear from you about tonight's show. Please send us your questions and comments to info@authorsaccess.com. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views Incorporated and Loving Healing Press.
And for Reader Views, this is Irene Watson in Austin, Texas, saying good night.
For Loving Healing Press, this is Victor Volkman in Ann Arbor, Michigan, wishing you all a good evening.